You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast. It's Tuesday, January 29th, 2019. I'm your host, John B. from gangrenenation.com. We are mixing the schedule up a little bit this week. We try and do one mailbag show a week, and usually it's on Thursday, but I always plan the week out in advance, and sometimes scheduling means we have to move the mailbag around a little bit just to accommodate guests we're going to have on the show, and that's one of those weeks. So we're doing our mailbag show on Tuesday this week, so we'll jump right in here. These are questions from our readers at gangrenenation.com. First question, name an under-the-radar free agent to fill a need for this team. I'm going to give you one that I have my eye on who is older than I think is ideal, but I think he's a guy who actually would be a pretty good fit for this team, and that's the guy from Oakland who plays tight end, Jared Cook. And I know the first comment you may make is, well, he's a tight end. Jets don't need a tight end. They have Chris Herndon. Well, let me rebut that. You can play more than one tight end at a time. And Cook, he's going to be 32 when the season starts, but he's coming off a good year. He's a guy who's really kind of rehabilitated his career over the last few years, because there was one point where he was kind of a punchline, where he was a guy who was known for dropping passes and, you know, not producing at a level commensurate with his talents. And he's really kind of, he's grown ever since the year he spent in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. Again, he had a good 2018 on a bad Raiders team. But why am I looking at the tight end position? Well, because I want the Jets to actually be a team that presents opponents with matchup problems. Now, if you have, Herndon's looking pretty good, but now if you have two tight ends who can catch the ball, it puts more stress on the defense. And, you can talk about needs. As I discussed on a recent show, needs are not just about position. Needs are about roles. It's not just about, oh, we have a tight end, so we're fine. The Jets need playmakers on the offensive side of the football. So if you add another good tight end to pair with Herndon, you're creating problems for the defense. And that, I think that's ultimately the goal. He was a Pro Bowler this year. He had 68 catches, 896 yards, 6 touchdowns. I'm not sure those numbers necessarily are indicative of what you're getting, but I think this is a guy who could be a pretty good fit for the Jets. I think he's a guy I might go after, even though he's older than I think is ideal. But that's, free agency, it's very rare you're going to find the ideal fit in free agency, the guy who's just perfect. I think to some extent, most players you're going to target in free agency are going to have some warts with them, so you just have to prioritize what you want. And that's a guy who, I'm not sure. You may argue he's not under the radar because he's a pretty well-known name, but I think that's a guy who's not really on the radar for many Jets fans who I might take a look at. Our next question. The Jets will likely go to 4-3 under Greg Williams. Does it really matter figuring the Jets play nickel or dime most of the game? Well, here's what I'm going to tell you. And I actually wrote an article recently for this on gangrenenation.com, so you can read the article if you'd like. I think you're absolutely right on that. I think that this whole 4-3 versus 3-4 thing is vastly overstated. And one of the big contributors to that is that in today's NFL, you're playing nickel or dime most of the time, because in today's NFL, everybody's putting three wide receivers at least on the field at almost all situations. A lineup with two receivers, a tight end, a fullback, and the tailback, that's kind of a thing of the past. That's kind of a situational form. That's a situational personnel grouping these days for most teams. That used to be the old base formation on offense, but it's not. It's really nobody's base formation on offense anymore. Everybody's putting at least three receivers onto the field in most situations. If not, then you may see a look with one back, two tight ends, and two receivers. So maybe that's the closest thing you'll get to a base formation, I think, these days, that resembles what you had in the past. But I think most teams are playing three receivers most of the time. There was a stat from Pro Football Focus that over the last two seasons, Denver has played the most plays with four defensive backs on the field, and they've only done it 42% of the time. So that's the team that's done the most in the league, and they still have four defensive backs on the field less than half the time, only 42% of the time. So, yeah. And, I mean, the other thing about this is that even if you go beyond the idea you're going to play five defensive backs, defenses are more flexible these days. They're more adaptable. As offenses get more sophisticated, defenses have to get more sophisticated. The days where you can just do the entire thing on defense for the whole game are largely gone, unless you have a super talented unit like the Legion of Boom Seahawks, where they were not really trying to confuse the offense. They just had so much talent that, you know, they said, we're going to do essentially one of two things on almost every play. We're not going to try and fool the offense. We're just going to go out there and out-talent them. Unless you have that type of talent, you have to mix things up a little bit. So you'll see most teams, they'll run three-man fronts. They'll run four-man fronts. They'll do things differently. And Greg Williams is also the type of coach who seems pretty adaptable based on what I've seen. He's a guy who, and this is one thing I like in a coach. It seems to me he's a guy who adapts to his talent in terms of fronts he runs, in terms of formations, more than saying, this is my scheme, this is what we have to do. And the other thing I'd say is that I think the differences between 3-4 and 4-3, and I'd use quotes to talk 3-4 or 4-3, because again, I don't think that the differences are as great as they used to be. Back in the past, you had 3-4 defenses where the idea for your defensive lineman was simply to tie up blockers, hold the point of attack, nobody was attacking. Those defenses are largely out the window. Most 3-4, quote-unquote 3-4 defenses, their assignments for defensive linemen are a lot like 4-3 defenses these days, because the passing game means that you can't just have your defensive lineman trying to hold the point of attack. You need to get after the quarterback. So even if you're playing a three-man defensive line, they're typically attacking the way you'd see in maybe a more traditional 4-3 than. So if you're playing a three-man defensive line, they're not really taking the roles that they had in the 3-4, the old classic 3-4. That's not the way the responsibilities are divvied up anymore. You guys who are, even if you're playing a three-man defensive line, they're playing more like it's a 4-3. The only real difference is that your edge pass rusher has his hand off the ground, is standing up. So yeah, I'm totally with you on that. I think when we're talking about NFL defensive systems, the differences between them are not really 4-3 versus 3-4 anymore. They're more, how often do you blitz? How often do you play man versus zone? Things like that. I think it's less, you know, what your front is these days, because everybody's showing multiple fronts, and the differences between, you know, the differences have kind of been blurred. I think everybody's kind of running something resembling a hybrid defense these days. It's NFL playoff time. It's the most wonderful time of the year, and you can get in on the daily action by signing up at MyBookie today. They pay fast when you win, ownership really cares about good customer service, and they offer the craziest prop bets. Where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. If you join now, MyBookie will offer you a 50% deposit bonus by using promo code LOCKEDON25. That's LOCKEDON, number 5, when you deposit to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON25. At MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Our next question. It doesn't look like the strongest classes on the offensive side of the ball in either free agency or the draft. With so many holes to fill on both sides of the ball on a roster devoid of talent, wouldn't stockpiling talent on defense be a good strategy? Well, I think you're trying to build on both sides of the ball. I mean, to me, if I'm building a team, and you know, people have asked me many times, would you rather have a great offense or a great defense? And my answer is I want to be really good on both sides of the ball. In fact, if you're asking me, I'd rather have like the number 6 offense and the number 6 defense than one unit be number 1 and one unit be number 20. I always think balance is the best method for building a good team. I think that, and the reason I say that is because it allows you to win any way you possible. You know, if you have a great offense and a bad defense, well, there's going to be a game where your offense is just going to stink and nothing's going to click. So maybe you're not going to be able to lean on your defense to carry you to a win. Whereas if you're balanced on both sides of the ball, a day your offense stinks, your defense can carry you to a win. A day your defense stinks, your offense can go out and win a shootout. So I like the idea of being balanced. Now, I think when you're building a team, you do have to kind of lean toward the strength of a free agency class or a draft. But at the same time, and that's just something I think in general, but look, the Jets need to get pieces around Sam Darnold. I think that has to be the priority. You're trying to build around this quarterback. You want Sam Darnold to become a quarterback who can lift this team up. So the Jets, I think, to be honest with you, I would probably prioritize offense more than defense. I'd go against my normal philosophy. You know, my normal philosophy is I'd try and lean more towards the strength of free agency, toward the strength of the draft, and build that way. But I just think that there's a real need for the Jets to upgrade this talent around Sam Darnold. The defense is not you're right, the defense does have needs. The defense does have some issues in certain places, but I think it's a little further along than the offense. I think there actually are pieces on this defense that are workable. Now, when you consider the amount of resources the Jets have spent on this defense, it's not great. You know, you'd like to have a lot more on the defensive side of the ball, considering how much the Jets have spent building that side, building that unit. But I think that on the offensive side of the ball, it has to be where you're looking, just because, first of all, it's so barren, and second of all, you have this young quarterback that you're trying to support. So I would really look to... I'm not saying you turn down quality defensive players. The Jets need quality defensive players, especially on the edge and corner, but my priority would actually be more focused on the offense. If all things are equal, I'd like to upgrade the offensive side of the ball. Next question. What's the rule on Woody Johnson's involvement with his team during his ambassadorship? Can he be consulted or just kept informed? Has he been part of these decisions or just a spectator? Is this just a matter of law? Is this a matter of law or just optics and tradition? We need to know whom to blame. I'm not aware of any rule that he cannot be involved while he's an ambassador. Now, that may be, at least on the Jets side and the NFL side, I'm not sure, you know, that there's any rule that prohibits him from being involved. Now, in his current job, it's, you know, it's a pretty important job for the United States. So maybe maybe the United States has asked him, you know, don't be involved. Maybe, you know, you got to focus on your current job because it's an important one. I don't know of any rule from the NFL side that he can't be involved, but, you know, simply put, he's not there day to day. So somebody else has to run the day to day operations. And the Jets are telling us that it's Chris Johnson. I mean, the Jets have told us Chris Johnson was behind the Bowles, McCagnon extensions of 2017. Chris Johnson said himself that he made the decision to fire Todd Bowles. He had the final call on hiring Adam Gase. So I don't see any reason why they would lie about that. That wasn't the case. I mean, I don't think that there's... I mean, I don't see what would be wrong with Woody Johnson being involved if he was involved. So if he was involved, I don't see why the Jets just wouldn't tell us that. So my hunch is that... It's what the Jets have told us. I don't see any reason to believe that the Jets would be lying in that situation. So I'm inclined to believe them. Next question, is Le'Veon Bell a realistic option? This one was from Twitter. Is Le'Veon Bell a realistic option, or should we not get our hopes up? I think it's going to happen, to be honest with you. If you're asking me, I think it's going to happen because, like I said a few questions ago, the Jets need to upgrade the talent around Sam Darnold. They need to get a go-to guy on offense. And right now you have a guy sitting out there who can be acquired for just cap space. And I think that's the issue with some of these other offensive weapons like an Antonio Brown. I don't want to say Mike Evans because I don't understand. I don't know where this idea of Mike Evans is available from Tampa Bay came from. I'm really skeptical on the idea Mike Evans is actually available. There's this the rumor I keep seeing on the internet that, you know, maybe the Jets can get Mike Evans, and it sounds like a lot of internet rumors that don't pan out. But like Antonio Brown, you don't just have to give up cap space to get him, sign him to, you know, to absorb his contract. You have to give up a premium draft pick. So Bell's out there. This is the difference between Le'Veon Bell now and Le'Veon Bell during the season. All you need is cap space, and the Jets have cap space to get Le'Veon Bell. Now, Bell's got some red flags. He's got some big concerns around him. But I feel like the Jets have kind of put themselves in a position where they have to roll the dice. And it's not great that they've done that, but that's where we are. So I think Bell... I just think it makes too much sense to not happen for both sides. And I was kind of up in the air on Bell, but the more I've thought about this, the more I feel like this is just going to be a risk the Jets have to take because they have to figure out ways to upgrade this talent level around Sam Darnold, and they have to figure out ways to make Sam's job easier. So getting a playmaker like Le'Veon Bell, a guy who can help you as both a runner and a receiver, and he's not just a guy who catches screens and can be dangerous on that. Like, he can legitimately run some routes. I think that that's something the Jets are really going to have to look at. And I hate the idea of paying a running back the kind of money Bell's going to command. I'm very concerned about the red flags, but the Jets have kind of painted themselves into a corner on this. So it's not just, you know, it's a dream. I think the Jets have kind of forced their own hand and forced themselves to take that risk. Next question, gut feeling. Do the Jets keep or trade the third pick? My gut feeling is that they're going to look to trade down. I think that that's probably the direction the Jets are heading in. I think that Arizona and San Francisco, I think they play into this. I feel like those teams are both just going to take edge guys. They're in position to grab the elite edge guys of the draft. I would be shocked if Bosa did not go number one overall. So I think that, and I don't understand this idea that Arizona is going to take Kyler Murray and trade Rosen. I don't know where that came from, but I think Arizona is taking Bosa number one overall, and then I wouldn't be surprised to see the Niners take an edge guy, which means the Jets will be in position to trade down if there's another team that wants to move up for, you know, a quarterback for somebody else. You know, people say nobody's going to move up for a quarterback. Well, plenty of years I've seen a draft that allegedly did not have great quarterbacks, and teams are still trading up for those quarterbacks. So I think the groundwork is laid before the draft. Team, if you want to trade down, I think there's a good chance you can trade down. And if you don't want to trade down, I don't think the Jets have wanted to trade down in the first round in recent years. That's the reason they haven't, is they really did not want to trade down. They had to be blown away if they were going to make a trade in years past. Whereas this year, I mean, this team just needs so much. I think it just makes too much sense for the Jets not to trade down. It makes too much sense for the Jets to trade down for them to not explore it. So I feel like that they're going to look to get out of this pick. You know, you look at what their needs are and versus what's available. It's a defensive heavy at the top of the draft. I think the Jets probably prioritizing offense a little bit more. So I think that they'll look to get out of this pick. They'll look to recoup what they can, try and add to their draft capital, because they enter this without their second round pick this year as a result of the trade for Darnold. They need to try and get that back at the very least. So I would be very surprised if the Jets did not move down and did not make an attempt to move down in this draft. I think that they almost have to. Our last question deals with Jordan Jenkins. Does he become expendable in Greg Williams' system? Well, I think the issue is not so much Greg Williams' system as much as it's a Jenkins issue, and I think he's still going to be on the team this year. But the issue is just like he almost took a step back this year, which is kind of odd to say because he had 7 sacks. But if you look at some of the other numbers, it's just not that impressive. I mean, I think he took a step back as an edge run defender. I think after the second year of his career, I was kind of optimistic about him becoming, you know, just a solid player, a guy who could set the edge, a guy who could help you in run defense. And that's not exactly what you're looking for an edge guy in today's NFL, but at least would make him a guy who could stay on the field for 2 downs. Now, he had 7 sacks this year, but 7 sacks for an edge guy is really not that spectacular. And also, you look at total pressures according to Pro Football Focus. He only had 35 total pressures on the year. And the reason total pressures are important is they can kind of guide us to tell us whether a player was lucky or unlucky. So a guy who's, you know, top 10 in the league in pressures but only had 7 sacks, that's a guy you think, all right, well, he got a little unlucky, because sacks are partially you doing something well, but they're also dependent on luck to a degree, because you may beat somebody and you may force the quarterback to step into somebody else. And conversely, you know, you may be kind of stonewalled, but the pressure somebody else applies may make the quarterback slide right into you. I think of that year, if you may remember, 2013 with Calvin Pace, where he had 10 sacks, and not like Calvin Pace was playing that great that year. It was just a situation where Pace was always in the right place at the right time. And you could see, based on the fact Pace was not getting a lot of pressures, it was probably not going to be sustainable. And Pace did not sustain those numbers, because if you're generating your own pressures, you're going to get to the quarterback eventually. You know, you're going to get to the court. Eventually, luck's going to even out. If you're constantly getting pressure on the quarterback, you're going to convert some of those into sacks. Whereas if you're not getting pressures, you're more dependent on just somebody forcing the quarterback to slide right into you. And I think that's really more where Jenkins was this year. I don't think Jenkins is a guy who's good. To me, 6-7 sacks was always the boom scenario. 6-7-8 sacks, that was always the boom scenario for Jenkins. I don't think he's going to suddenly become a 12-sack guy. I think, he, you know, what we saw this year is probably the most he's going to get in terms of sacks, but he's not also not a guy the Jets can count on for consistent pressure. And more disturbing to me is just I think he took a step back as an edge defender this year. I think he, again, I think he was a guy who, after year two in this league, looked like he was going to be a reliable run defender, which, you know, is something. It's a role. You could be a role player. Whereas after this year, I have more questions about his viability long term with this team. And I think 2019 becomes a very important year for him in his career with the Jets. That's all for today's show. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe, iTunes or Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Hope you have a great Tuesday. We'll be back again tomorrow.